We're going to have a one-off class in here, dealing with the book of Nehemiah. And I wanted to preface it with this. We've studied Nehemiah looking at a group of people that had a mind to work, right? That's what Nehemiah is famous for. What did Nehemiah do? What did Nehemiah do with the help of God in this book? What did he come back to do? You remember? Build a wall, right? Build a wall. So, and the people were able to do that because they had a mind to work. And we've talked about that. And last year there was a class on the book of Nehemiah. But what I wanted to look at this morning is what is it? Okay, so we have a mind to work. And I wanted to preface it with this idea. It is my opinion that this congregation has a mind to work. We do a lot of wall building. January Mission Sunday is a time we build a wall together, right? We do a lot of work throughout the year as we work in this area. The deacons work very hard in the work here, and the elders. We do a lot of wall building together. And it is my opinion that this congregation has that mindset. But what do we do day to day to maintain that mindset? What is it that we need to do to make sure that we aren't slack, that our hands aren't slack in the work that we need to do? And we're going to go back to Nehemiah, and there's going to be three things we're going to look at that I believe would help us to maintain that mindset of the work that we have to do. But I really want to focus and start by looking at the concept of what they actually accomplished. They built a wall. How many of you have built big things before? Anybody build anything that was big? Dirk's raising his hand. Yeah, so some of us have built things, and when you build things, it takes some time. The wall that they built isn't just a wall that we might build in our homes, right? It was a large wall. The estimates are that it was 2.5 miles long, average height of 40 feet, average thickness of 8 feet, a little over 8 feet, 34 watchtowers, 7 gates. Do you remember the time period they did that in? Do you remember? 52 days. The wall was rebuilt and refortified. Obviously, this is a city that its walls get torn down and built back up several times throughout history. That wall was rebuilt in like the 1500s, and it took them 4 years to rebuild that wall. Now, they might have put more design and hewn the stone a little prettier, right? But in the end, it took them much longer to do that kind of wall. In 2007, they found a part of the wall. Actually, they recognized what the wall was. That, to be more accurate, there's this wall sitting there that they thought was dated to a much, after the time of Christ is what they thought this wall, this area was dated to. But they had to do some excavation around it and hold up one of the towers because, you know, it was falling over. You know, things fall over when they have some age on them. And so they did some excavation underneath this wall and they found out, this wall dates back to the time of Nehemiah. And that was in 2007. And what's interesting is we look at the book of Nehemiah, who are the antagonists in Nehemiah? Do you remember the antagonists? There's some weird names. I recognize that. I'll give you a break. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem/Geshmu, right? The Arab, okay? So those are our antagonists. Did you know that those names have been found in history? Not just the names, but these individuals, people have been found in the records with those names. Now, we're reading this the book of Nehemiah, and we believe it is a factual account. But over and over and over again, archaeology is confirming the story, the account of the Bible. And so all these people are found in history. So we're not dealing with something that's just some, you know, a cute little fairy tale. We're dealing with actual facts, actual people that lived there. And so it makes it more human. Does it help us draw us into, these were people who were dealing this and working in this way and working mightily for God. And so they had this huge work to do. And Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 19, Nehemiah prays a lot. In Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 19, he says, "Remember me for good, O my God. Remember, O my God, me for good." So this morning, we're continuing to remember Nehemiah and the work that he did. But we want to look at three things that we need to keep in mind if we're going to keep our a mindset of work. We need to first remember that God's part in everything, right? We need to remember God's part. What was it that Romans chapter 14, verse 8, if we live or die, we are the Lord's, right? We need to keep that in our forefront of our minds. When Nehemiah heard about what was going on in the city, what did he do in chapter 1 of Nehemiah? His brother came to him and told him, he asked him, how are things in Jerusalem? The first people have already gone back, and he asked, how are things in Jerusalem? And his brother told him what? Things aren't going well, right? Things are not going well. We have no fortified wall, and you know, and we are, it's not good. And Nehemiah says, oh man, I'll pray for you, right? What does Nehemiah do? Well, he does pray, right? But he fasts and he's in anguish over the state of the people of God in Jerusalem, over his family, over those that are there. And so chapter 1 is a prayer. And chapter 1 is a prayer of repentance. He's not in that moment, oh God, please help these people. That's not what he prays for. He says, God, we have sinned. Right? We've done wrong. We've done things we shouldn't have. We've turned away from you. Help us now. Look in chapter 1, verse 11. It says, O Lord, I beseech you, may your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and the prayer of your servants who delight to revere your name and make your servant successful today and grant him compassion before this man. Who's this man he's talking about? The king, right? Who is Nehemiah's job's a cupbearer? And please don't think that the cupbearer concept is what we see maybe in a Camelot kind of setting. A cupbearer was more important than just somebody who brought it. You had to be somebody to be the cupbearer. You weren't just any old guy. Okay, and so please keep that in the forefront of your mind. Why would a king listen to somebody? Because he was somebody, this cupbearer Nehemiah. So chapter 2. Chapter 2 happens, and you guys know the story. What happens in chapter 2? He's in front of the king, right? And the king asks him, why such a long face? That's the paraphrased New Living Translation, right? So, why such a long face? What does he tell him? This is Bible class. You guys can talk. What does he tell him? He talks about the gates of Jerusalem, talks about the city of his fathers, right? And the king basically asks him, all right, what do you want to do about that? He's like, well, I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. Was that his response? No. He already had a plan. This guy was thinking. So, wait a second. So, he prays to God, grant me favor, and says, well, I hope that happens, and then he goes on. No, he said, grant me favor, and then made a plan to respond to the king as though God was going to answer that prayer. Was he surprised when the king said, hey, this is what do you want me to do? Because that's what he prayed for. Are we surprised sometimes when God answers prayers? Like, wow, that actually worked. Right? We need to be ready to work. When God says move, and we pray for God to help us move, we don't need to be sitting there and saying, all right, see what happens. We need to move, right? Get ready to move. And Nehemiah did that. He knew God was working, right? He knew those things were going to take place, and he had a plan in place. He said, I need these letters. I need this permission. And the king said, how long are you going to be gone? He ends up being gone 12 years. All right, 12 years. How many of you, having employees, would have let your employee be gone for 12 years? How many of you would say, all right, bye, right? So he's gone 12 years, and so God answers this prayer over and over all, and throughout the book, he recognizes God as being part of what's happening. Whenever the king asks him in that moment, what do you want from me, what does the text say that he did? Did he respond right away, or what did he do first? He prayed. Nehemiah is a great example of prayer. He does these micro prayers. Throughout the book, there's these micro prayers. Is it all right to say a short prayer? All right. What needs to be engaged when we pray? The heart, right? So it's all right to say a short prayer. Do we have to get up and make sure we use all the big words and make sure we have the format just right? Sometimes we get hung up on formatting, right? But we need to make sure we're praying with the heart. And Nehemiah is a great example of that. So he prays, and he does that. Look over in 18 and 20, chapter 2, 18 and 20. When he gets to Jerusalem, it takes he's there for 3 days. He shows up with his whole cohort of people. He's there for 3 days, and what does he do in those 3 days? Yeah, he goes around the city. He doesn't say boo to anybody about what his plan is. If you've ever gone into a new place and going to start a work, and especially a big work, do you go in and you start announcing the first day, here's all the things we're going to do? Or maybe it's a good idea to just kind of sit and get to see where the people are, right? How am I going to motivate this people? Where are they spiritually? Where are they emotionally in order to do this? Because he knew it was going to take a lot of work to do this. And he needed to understand also what was going on. So he, in chapter 2, 18, he talks about God's work going to be involved in this. In chapter 4, verses 14, 15, and 20, he's talking about God working for us, God doing this. So over and over and over again, he recognizes God's part in what was going to be at stake, what was going to happen. Over and over again, you see Nehemiah praying. There are 10 prayers in the book of Nehemiah. And it would be an excellent study on your own to go through Nehemiah, read it. It's a short read. Read it and highlight those prayers. You'll be surprised at how often and what occasion he prays and how he prays. It's a great study. So, but there are 10 prayers. And so acknowledging God in the work, acknowledging God's part in that work, and acting like he's going to do something, right? Being ready to. So if we're going to have a mind to work, we first need to see that God's a part of the work that we're going to be doing. Also, we need to understand about the task at hand. Jesus mentioned this, right, in Luke chapter 14, verses 28 through 30. Nobody builds a tower but first counting the cost. We need to understand the task that's at hand. And in the time of Nehemiah in chapter 2, when he's going around the wall, he's going around and he, if you look at the gates he visits, he goes all the way around that wall. And the wall is in such disrepair, there's places and sections of the wall that he has to dismount in order to get around it. The wall is just that bad. It's that bad. So he needs to see what's happening. He needs to understand what's going on with the wall. And when he does that, then he comes to the people, right? And he talks about in verse 12 of chapter 2, I did not tell anyone what my God was putting into my mind to do for Jerusalem. Again, always acknowledging God. In verse 17 of chapter 2, he says this, then I said to them, you see the bad situation that we are in. You see this, right? And they're all kind of looking around, like, yeah, it's bad. This is not good, right? We've done that. You see the bad situation we are in. Yes, we see that. Jerusalem's gate is desolate, its gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. The people just can come in and do whatever they want to us. Let us build the gates. And then he says, I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable with me and also the king's words which he had spoken to me. And they said, let us arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work. Now when he said this, when he tells them about who first, who is it he mentions first as far as being involved in this work? God. Why would he mention the king? Why was it important to mention the king? Any ideas? Exactly. That's exactly right. So he prayed to God, and God gave him permission from the king to do this. It was important to mention that so they were not doing some clandestine operation, right? This was under the parameters of the government at that time, so to speak, that we had permission to do this work. So nobody can come in and say, well, you can't do this. He said, we have writ that we can do this work. And so we can do it. God's going to be with us, and we have permission from the king. So what's stopping us? Nothing. Only us. Only us to actually do the work. So they have everything ready. They have all the materials ready to do the work. And so he puts everything in place and understands what's going on and tells them about what's happening, and they begin to do the work. Now, when they start building the wall, What does Nehemiah do as far as building the wall? What is it unique about this building scenario that we don't see in a lot of other, I guess, building projects in the Old Testament? And when they built the temple, they had certain people that were assigned to build certain things. When they built the tabernacle, there were certain people and craftsmen that were assigned to build certain things. But when they built the wall, what do you notice about chapter 3 that is different when they built the wall? They built it by a family unit, so they divided the wall all the way up, 2.5 miles all the way around the wall, and they divided it up into family sections. And we've talked about this before, but why would that be an appropriate way of building a section of wall? What do you have or should have inside a family unit that's already ready to go to work? Cohesiveness. What do you look for in a people that are working together? That they've worked before, there's a chain of command, so to speak. They work well together. They know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and they work together as a family. Wow. Does that sound like anything we should be doing here? Yes, very much so, right? Very much so. And so we work together as a family. The Bible talks about us being a family of God, and we've talked about this in Ephesians, about every part doing its job, and we work together building the wall here, right? So he understands, Nehemiah sees the work that needs to be done, understands the task at hand, understands how to attack that task, first with God, and then using everybody's talents and everybody's abilities to do that work. And what's interesting, he mentions and just goes through, and you can see and actually know what section of the wall each family unit was working on. But the only time he mentions anything extra in this section is in verse 20 of chapter 3. He says, after him, Baruch, the son of Zabal, zealously repaired another section from the angle of the doorway to the house of Eliashib and the high priest. Now, why would somebody want to mention somebody who is zealously working? It's an example, right? An encouragement. Can you tell a difference between somebody who's zealously working and somebody who's kind of, meh, working? Right? You can tell. Can you tell the difference between when somebody's working when the boss is around and when the boss isn't around? Have y'all noticed that in other people, right? In other people, right? Okay, all right, just getting that out there. So here's a family unit that was working zealously for the Lord, and they got like honorable mention in the Bible for it. Okay, so we need to make sure that we're having that same attitude, that same spirit, that we're working zealously for the work that's here. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's the two. I don't know if y'all heard that. There's two ideas there as far as there's the family of God that's made up of a bunch of families, right? Is what we were saying. And he picked family units, you know, family biological family units. And we have that here too. We have family units that make up this family here. But in an ideal world, when you look at passages like Colossians 3 and those kind of things, when you add those, put on Christ, we should be, right, that family unit. And we're talking about ideals, right? We might every once in a while, I'm sure it's different in your family. In my family, sometimes we have issues. I would not think that of your families, but in my family, just being honest, right, we have, so... is it possible that if we apply certain characteristics that we can, the Bible's given us things, if you do these things, there will be less issues, right? There will be ways of overcoming those issues. Yes, sir, Dirk. Yes. Yes, that is very true. This is something that, have you seen building projects where a family buys a brick or something like that? And they put their name on the brick, that's something. Actually, I toured a wall one time in Germany. The wall was destroyed around the city during World War II, and they rebuilt the wall doing that kind of thing. Everybody bought a brick, and there were names all over the walls and that kind of stuff. And so to speak, I mean, I didn't think about this until you mentioned that, but later on, future generations could walk around that wall and say, "This is the wall, the section that my family built." Does that mean something? If you're teaching younger children coming up, this is a section of the wall that our family built. We have worked to get to this point. In reading, you know, we have a book here in back in the church archives that essentially says this is a section that different families built. Not, but just saying here's the work that's been done throughout the years. And it's amazing to go back and see the family names and those that have been elders, those that have been involved in the work, those that have been here and say, this is, we're building, we're working together. Yes, sir. Yes. Yep. And that's very true. That's another wall building moment, right? Whenever, you know, physically see the things that the church was able to do there and painting the church on 36th Street in one day. And we have opportunity to do that here in many different ways, right? In many different ways. So the different works that people are involved in. Yes, sir. Yep. We teach, we pass on those kind of ideas. And there's all kinds of teaching moments that we can capitalize on as with our families. In, I'll put in a shameless plug for Tim Fry, but, you know, work days here at the building and coming down to work. I remember doing that when I was a kid. I don't remember, my dad like farmed us out when we were kids, like to do work. And I remember doing that. At the time, I didn't think like it was that big a deal. But when I got older, it became something that we did. Men went down to the church on work day and worked at the building. That's what men did, right? And so when I got to go do be a part of that work and understood and was mature enough to understand what we were doing, that became a really cool thing to do that because that's what men did. I think I said that right. But it's not just a male thing, obviously. I've grown up and ladies can do a lot of work and too. So there's all kinds of work to do. That's not trying to be mean there. Okay, moving along. So there's all kinds of work. We had a household full of boys when I was growing up, so that was, I'm switching gears. Right, Vivian? Okay. So we need to make sure we know God's part. We need to know the task at hand. We need to know what the challenge is. Part of the challenge in this task was what? For me, Nehemiah would be a great movie because it has all the great parts of an excellent movie. Maybe Spielberg would take it on, but what do you need in a great movie? You need the antagonists, right? And so they said, let's do this great work. And I'm sure for you, you've decided, I'm going to make change, I'm going to do a great work, I'm going to do these things, and there were no opposition to you, right? You've never had any issues doing what God asked you to do. Never. Well, it happened here, right? As soon as they put their hands to the good work, verse 19, but when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite, and the official Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? So I answered to them and said, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem. Now, it's interesting he said that because Sanballat and Tobiah, one of these guys, I think, I forget rough hand, one of these guys kind of had married in, so they were like second cousins, third removed, something like that, married into the Hebrew people. And so he says, you have nothing to do, even though you've married in, you have nothing to do with us. This is our work, right? And God's going to do it. And so they stand very firm in what they're doing, and this is the work that we have to do. At every opposition, recognize God. At every opposition, don't change course, right? Don't change course. Now, there was opposition from without. They even resort in chapter 6 to have this plot. They invite Nehemiah to come down to the plain of Ono and let's just talk about some stuff. And he says no. And he says no five times to them. They keep saying, come on down to the plain of Ono. No, I'm not going to go down. I know that you mean me harm. And so this is a life lesson. There are times you just don't need to go to every invitation, right? Hey, let's go out and go to this party or whatever. Don't go down to the plain of Ono. They mean harm, all right? So just make that sort of like a life lesson. Don't go down with those who are evil. They will mean you harm. But so much so that they continue to invite him to come down. And then they resort to blackmail. Chapter 6, verses 6 and 7. He says, it was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshmu says, all right, in the King James, I like how it says, even Geshmu says this, right? Geshmu is Geshem, the Arab guy. It says that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore, you are building the wall, and you are to be their king according to these reports. You have also appointed prophets to proclaim in Jerusalem concerning you as a king in Judah. And now it is reported to the king according to these reports. So come now, let us take counsel together. What is he doing when he does this? I think in the playground we would have said, I'm telling on you, right? I think that's what he's saying. That's the card he's playing here in this moment. I'm going to tell on you if you don't come down and play with us, is what I think, if we want to really simplify that statement there. And how does Nehemiah respond? He essentially says, paraphrasing, you're making that up, we're going to keep working, right? You're making all that up, we're going to keep working. He has no fear, obviously, because of God, and he has written permission from the king. The king knows him personally, like they're like, you know, besties. They have the little heart thing that when he left. So he knows him, okay? He knows him. And so he does not have to be afraid. But he sends them this message. Verse 9, for all of them are trying to frighten us, thinking they will become discouraged with the work and it will not be done. But he prays again. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. Are there times when, and this is a kind of a phrase that repeats, even in the New Testament, in Hebrews, in chapter 12, the writer of Hebrews says, strengthen your feeble knees, right? There are times when we're working, and we get discouraged. Anybody been there? Okay, it happens, right? It happens. And there's times when we need to pray to God, just strengthen my hands, strengthen my heart to do the work I need to do. And he does that here. And so there will be opposition, but seek strength from God and seek strength from each other, from those that are there. Now, in this situation, so that was the opposition from without, the guys outside. And now there's opposition from within. Opposition from within. This kind of goes back to what you're saying earlier. There can be opposition from within the camp, right? So in this situation, they encourage him to come and go hide out. Go hide out in the temple. Go hide out in the temple. They're going to come kill you, Nehemiah. And this is chapter 6, just after he prayed. Go hide out in the temple, and you'll be safe there. And everything will be cool. Why would they want him to hide out in the temple? Why the temple? As far as fortified locations, is a temple a good place? Yes, sir, exactly. But what would be wrong with Nehemiah being in the temple? He wasn't a high priest. You see what they're trying to do there? They were trying to trip him up. It would be the perfect place. It's God's there. It's got the, you know, the walls, and it's great. That would be great. But he's not a Levite. He can't do that. And they were trying to trick him to do that and get him in there. And so he says, I can't do this. And he realized that these people were hired to do this. And so it was Tobiah that talks about them sending letters, discourse back and forth about trying to trip him up. So there was opposition from without, there was opposition within, but they still did the work at hand. Now, when the opposition came hard and pressed hard, and they were in fear for their lives in the work, chapter 4, what did they do? This is kind of transitioning into our third thing. We need to know God's part in what's going on. We need to know the work that's at hand. There will be opposition. Yes, Sanballat's kind of upset. He is sorely vexed, right? He's sorely vexed about what's happening. So we need to know God's part. We need to know the task at hand. And we also need to know what's at stake. What's at stake? If we're going to have a mind to work and we're going to continue to do this work faithfully and with great zeal, we need to know what's at stake. And so this discouragement came. They pray several times. Then verse 3, Tobiah the Ammonite was near him and said, even what they were building, if a fox should jump up on it, he would break down their stone wall. So they're making fun of their wall. And Nehemiah prays, hear, O God, how we are despised, return the reproach on their own heads and give them up for plunder in the land of captivity. And so he prays, so he built the wall, right? And the people had in mind to work, chapter 4, verse 6. And so they were very angry, right? Verse 7, because the wall was being closed up, and they were getting angry about that. And so they said, we're gonna come in among you and fight against you. And so they set up a guard. Now, if you are fighting in a battle, do you want all your troops scattered to the wind all around a wall, or do you want your troops working in one section? How would you want your troops, as far as strategically placed? You want them more concentrated to work and fight in one area, right? But they're scattered all the way around the wall in a quasi-circle, 2.5-mile circle around this wall. So at any point, the enemy could come in and attack them. He said, so they set up a system. They set up a system. What did they do in order to prepare for a possible attack? What does the Bible say they did? They're working, right? They got their concealed license, and they're carrying the whole time, right? They got a sword in one hand and a trowel in the other. They're working at all times. Now the text goes on to say that they are working around the clock. They didn't change their clothes. They lay down, slept, and got up and kept working. And there was somebody always. They took their weapons with them, even to get drink. And so they were always armed, ready for what was going to happen. Is it possible for us to be always spiritually ready? Is there any encouragement in the New Testament talking about be ready to give an answer? There are so many applications we can make here with this, but we need to understand that we must be ready for the attack that it's at hand. Satan is depicted as a fluffy lamb that will come and lick you at some point, right? No, as a roaring lion that was seeking whom he may devour. We need to be ready at all times. Why? What does he encourage them? And so this is another, I don't know if you've ever watched, how many of you watch movies? Anybody? Okay, I like you. Okay, so there's this montage moment in movies that usually comes after a great speech. Independence Day is one of the great examples of this. You know, we will not go quietly in the night. This is our Independence Day. And then they make all the preparations, you know, for aliens. So in this situation, in verse 14, in chapter 4, he says, when I saw their fear, I arose and spoke to the nobles. Here, as a leader, he saw what was going on. In our families, we need to be aware of what's going on, right? As parents, we need to be aware of what's happening in our children's lives so that we can take appropriate action. We need to be aware of what's going on in this church family so we can take appropriate action and help one another. In this case, it was fear. He said, when I saw their fear, I arose and spoke to the nobles and officials and says, do not be afraid of them. Remember our Lord. And what words does he say in remembering our Lord? Who is what? Great and awesome. I think we overuse awesome. We've watered down what awesome is. But in this case, he's saying God is great and awesome. The God you are serving right now is great and awesome. Remember him first. Yes, sir.
That's where everybody rallied.
Yes. And it was the type of trumpets where they have these like curled ram's horns they would use to blow that sound and cry to battle, come to that point. Which, I don't know, makes it even more cool. Not some brass trumpet kind of thing, but I mean, just this call to war, to go and fight. That's me, but anyway, it's really cool to see. But in this situation, what are they fighting for in verse 14? He says, remember God who's great and awesome. Fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, your houses, your favorite climbing tree. Everything, right? Everything. Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And later on in the book, they had to do some more to separate themselves, right? They had married, and they shouldn't have been married to certain people. They had to really separate, come out from apart among those people and be elect, right? And be the people. That's a very, very good point. I don't know if you've heard that or not, but they've been kind of living with the people in the land, but when they said, we're going to build walls, we're going to draw lines, we're going to be God's people like he wants us to be, that's when the opposition came. And how many of us have done that, made changes in our lives, and we're going to do these things, but when that happens, when I try to do good, bad things happen. Why is that? Because people don't want that. Because somebody gets very angry when we do good, right? And so God's not going to put up. Well, anyway, that's another lesson. So in this situation, they need to fight for everything they hold dear. There's nothing in this list of things that is not valuable to them. And so remember God who's great and awesome, and fight for everything you think is important. And that has not changed. The stakes have not changed for us. The stakes have not changed. We still need to fight for everything we hold dear. Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir. We are fighting. This is spiritual warfare, right? In a lot of ways, we're arming ourselves when we come here. We're defending ourselves. We're polishing the armor and working together. And like you're saying, we're this is spiritual warfare we're involved in. And the stake has not changed. When we understand what's at stake, if I do nothing, we lose everything. Right? If we do nothing, if we sit and float through life, we lose everything we hold dear. We need to stand up, draw that line in the sand, and say no further. I'm standing in the gap, right? I'm standing on the wall, and Satan, you can't have my family. You can't have my friends. You can't have everything I hold dear. We're standing together as a family. Okay, this is huge. This is like a hoorah moment for the people and the big change. And so after this moment is that 80s montage when they build the wall. Okay, that's what happens in the movie when they play the song and everything happens and they begin building that wall and finish this great project after that opposition. There's so many great examples we have in the book of Nehemiah, but three things we need to remember this morning. Remember God's part in the work that we have to do. We have a mindset to work, but remember God's part in what we're doing. Remember the work we have at hand. Remember the work. And remember what's at stake. So we don't lose that mind to work, that we don't kind of float, we don't just put it in idle and go. Yes, sir. Yes. Yeah, that's very true. I mean, any time that we do nothing, in this case, the evil wins, right? And we need to make sure that we're doing those things. Any thoughts or questions or comments before we close? All right, thank you very much for your time this morning.